Nadine M. Newfoyle's story is not the story of primitive African tribes or so-called third world countries. This is the United States of America in the year 2022, the 21st century, the cradle of freedom and democracy.
Because Brandy's case reminded Guard of Anitra Coburn.
Carter kidnapped Anitra and eventually took her to her grandparents' trailer in Franklin County.
Coburn's boyfriend kidnapped her from her Pitt County home and murdered her after holding her hostage for a week.
Half a century has passed since the protests of American women in 1970. And now, domestic violence has the voice of Angelina Jolie, a Hollywood star who was also once a victim.
Most of all, I want to acknowledge the children who are terrified and suffering at this moment, and the many people for whom this legislation comes too late.
A bipartisan group of U.S. senators has introduced a proposal to reauthorize a 1990s law that expands protections for victims of domestic and sexual violence. This law was dissolved in 2019 due to the opposition of Republicans, which has led to the promotion and increase of violence and murder in American society. Angelina Jolie asks U.S. senators to approve this law and says, "I repeat, this is one of the most important votes you will cast in the Senate this year. When silence comes from a Congress too busy to renew the Violence Against Women Act after a decade, it reinforces that sense of worthlessness." It's clear that the indifference of the Congress and the American government has troubled the 47-year-old Oscar winner. This was the third time that Angelina asked the representatives of the U.S. Congress to revise the law to control domestic violence. This law was first sent to the Senate in 1990 by Joe Biden, who was then a senator, with the aim of reducing domestic and sexual violence. A later version was included in a bill signed by then-President Bill Clinton 4 years later. Congress has since reauthorized and extended the Violence Against Women Act 3 times.
Senator Joe Biden invited them to speak.
Battered women need to be taken seriously. Proper police response can prevent what happened to me from happening to someone else. Thank you.
Thank you.
The story of domestic violence in the United States and the law to deal with it is a paraphrase of the saying, "The law often shows its teeth, but does not bite." The United States has moved away from the slogan of creating equal conditions and ideal and happy life for women. In a way, this shows America cannot be a good model for other societies. F- feminist slogans try to make women equal to men in all matters. For example, the society should witness that women are beaten less. But why did feminism and women's movements target the family to achieve this goal? It was already known that a woman without a family would be disarmed. And that's how it happened. In practice, women still did not get their real rights. Until yesterday, they were under male violence at home. But today, they are under the domination of employers and cheap forces. They are now also responsible for financing themselves, a task that, at least in the distant years, was the responsibility of men. A century has passed from the American women's efforts to escape domestic violence and achieve equality. Yet domestic violence still takes 3 victims every day. Families are broken. Women are employed in menial jobs. And the salary and benefit system still consider women as second-hand labor. Kindergartens have expanded, but next to girls' high schools, right beside unmarried mothers. Joni Ernst, a Republican senator, is also a victim of sexual and domestic violence.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the will. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z here on IRIB English Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And yeah, obviously, the will is something that we should all be thinking about. At some point, and not necessarily when we get really old and we think we maybe just have another few years or 10 years, 1 year to live. This is something that is sort of very important no matter what age we are. And look, I do, for example, I know of some, the son of one of my friends who is only 22, he had actually already done his will. He did what is now very sort of quite current. He's recorded a little video where he sort of leaves his will, and this is what some of the young people too are doing. Then obviously in their will they also talk about their commitment to Allah, so these little videos are quite beautiful. And you know, so this is and why should we be thinking about our will? Why should we be thinking about our death? And that is, one reason is because we cannot take for granted that we're going to live, let's say, X number of days or years in this temporary life. We cannot take for granted that we're going to wake up tomorrow. And another reason is we're also told that if we do engage in thinking, basically thinking about our death and basically organizing what we need to organize, that action in itself is said to extend our days. So it's really important, and this is not necessarily a sort of morose thing. It just means that, you know, we are approaching death, day of judgment, and hereafter with a level of seriousness that we, in a sense, appreciate what we need to do. Welcome back to A to Z here on I'm Being Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously I'm talking about thinking about our will, death, the hereafter. So these are big topics, but these are topics that I think basically as soon as we, you know, for sure as we, as people have reached maturity in Islam, or at least into our 20s, that's something that we can start to think about. And I gave an example of a sort of young man, the son of one of my friends, who actually already has done this. But look, I also wanted to talk about just something from life of one of the famous martyrs of the Holy Defense, Saeed Jan Bozorgi. So what he did, so this is before his martyrdom, he, for example, had given his wife precise instructions on how to handle all her affairs without him. And, you know, this is something that we will see with all the martyrs of the Holy Defense. Sometimes it was, this is the ones who were martyred in active duty on the front lines. We would see that a few days or a few weeks before their martyrdom, they knew. And so they were able to give these sort of instructions. And then with others, for example, Martyr Saeed Jan Bozorgi, so he obviously did this because he reached martyrdom after the Holy Defense, dying of serious injuries. And, you know, this is something that is then, they do that, and they could even be a few months before their martyrdom because obviously the illness is progressing. And, you know, so I would urge everyone, especially everyone who has reached adulthood, you know, in their 20s and so on, to sort of start thinking about this and maybe start informing people, start writing something, and mentally start thinking about what's important, what do I need to do, what deeds do I need to send ahead of myself. And this is obviously probably the most important thing. There is not going to be a good hereafter unless we've actually thought about all the deeds that we can send ahead of ourselves and whether we're able to engage in the inner jihad and really purify away some of the sins. So that's the other very serious topic that as soon as we're thinking about our will arises automatically. So I pray that all of us are able to sort of devote more, let's say, thinking time to this and actually planning, writing time. And I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on I'm Youth Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z, and for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Sky is Good afternoon to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran. We are glad you could join us. Here on Iran Radio, we get familiar with interesting facts about the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran is considered one of the most significant sources which gave rise to the development of Islamic art and architecture, specifically the so-called Quranic arts of calligraphy and illumination. The Holy Quran is divided into 30 equal parts. There are 114 chapters or surahs and 6,236 verses or ayahs, containing 99,464 words made up of 330,113 letters. The longest surah of the Quran is Al-Baqarah, with 286 verses, which is the second surah of the Quran, while the shortest surah is Al-Kawthar, with only 3 verses. We start off this hour's programs with the key. The program presents short answers to doubts and ambiguities raised about various Islamic and Shiite topics. They will be followed by Round the World with reporters. Reporters from around the world tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. Listen to fascinating reports from countries both near and afar. And our final program this hour is Viewpoints. The program presents an analytical roundtable discussion of various political and social issues of the Islamic world today. Stay with us for the next hour.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be examining a very important question. And that question is related to, in general, it's related to one of the very important virtues within Islam, which is the virtue of knowledge. Of course, knowledge is not a not a final and essential virtue. Obviously, knowledge is a prelude to action and acting upon knowledge, which is essentially virtuous. But nevertheless, as a preliminary and a prelude to knowledge, is, you know, as a prelude to action, knowledge is significant. And how can we have knowledge if nobody teaches us? So teaching others is also very virtuous. Today on The Key, the question we want to pose today is this: what are the blessings that result from teaching? In order to answer this question, we can take inspiration from the hadiths which have been passed down to us regarding this very significant topic. In the book Tanbih al-Khawatir, it has been related that God Most High revealed the following to the Prophet Moses, saying, "O Moses, learn good and teach it to people. For verily I enlighten the graves of the teachers and the learners of good, so that they never feel afraid in their resting place." So one of the blessings of teaching, one of the good results and consequences of teaching, is that it leads to the luminosity, enlightenment of the grave of the person who taught and the one who learned from the person. In a beautiful tradition narrated from the Prophet Jesus, may peace be upon him as well as our Prophet, it's been reported that he said, "He who has knowledge acts upon what he knows and teaches it to others. This person is regarded as great in the greatest kingdom of heaven." This is a famous hadith. Du'iya fi malakut as-samawati azima. In this hadith, it's been mentioned, fi malakut al-a'la, azima. Right, so even though, unfortunately, today teaching is regarded as a very, not a very significant profession even teachers are not paid a lot. But in the eyes of God, teaching is a very noble profession. And in the heavens, in the spiritual kingdom, these people are respected, you know, by the angels and considered as very great individuals. Once the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "The best form of charity is for a man to gain knowledge and then teach it to his fellow brother." And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam also said, "Any man who has been granted knowledge by God but who suppresses it in spite of knowing it will meet God mighty and exalted on the day of resurrection, bridled with a rain of fire." So not only is teaching virtuous and, you know, recommended, but suppressing knowledge and not teaching it is very bad and has been considered as a meriting punishment on the day of judgment. Imam Ali alayhi salam has been reported as having said this: "God does not obligate the ignorant to learn until he has obliged the knowledgeable to teach." So it's both ways, both on the part of the student and the teacher. You know, both of them have a duty. The teacher is responsible to instruct his student, and the student to learn from the teacher. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We're looking at the blessings and consequences of knowledge in the light of the hadith of the infallibles, alayhim assalam. Until next time. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
As Israel's deadly onslaught in Gaza continues, any notion of a ceasefire exists in name only, according to Francesca Albanese. The UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories told a European Parliament hearing on Tuesday via video link that relatively few countries have stood up for Palestinians.
The rest have been bending backward and forward to comply with the diktat of the United States, including European countries and European Union.
Albanese is scathing about the US-driven plan for Gaza's future, especially the reconstruction proposals.
The reconstruction plan not only is wrong as it's planned, because it's planned without the Palestinians and while the bombing and the shooting and the starving are still ongoing, but also because Gaza is a crime scene.
Several lawmakers expressed anger that Palestinians are not being placed at the center of discussions about Gaza's future.
It's so striking, the current EU reaction to the 28-point plan regarding Ukraine, where the EU very clearly said there's no plan without the Ukrainians.
Once again, fresh calls were made for the EU to halt all trade with the Israeli regime. There have been any number of debates and events in the European Parliament relating to the plight of Palestinians, but they effectively come to nothing. This is because any potential sanctions don't even get as far as here, the EU Council. And that is because the European Commission knows they'll be blocked by certain member states.
Analysts argue that the EU has now taken a back seat on foreign policy, with the United States firmly in control.
I mean, the whole situation with the European Union in the Middle East now, it's clear there is no vision in Europe, there is no policy, at least no coherent policy.
Some legislators support Albanese's call for dual EU-Israeli nationals to be investigated upon re-entering the bloc, a measure previously applied to suspected foreign fighters returning from Daesh-controlled areas.
Was immediately, oh, this is a potential terrorist because he was fighting in the Middle East, and now it's completely silence. I mean, the right wing, although they always talk about security and how to watch the borders so that no terrorists come inside, now they receive with open hands.
Albanese told the committee that the EU should suspend all ties with Israel except those required to enforce international court rulings against Tel Aviv. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Braving the autumn chill, people across Indian-administered Kashmir gathered in large numbers on Tuesday to mark the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, the revered daughter of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. The Tuesday event concluded week-long ceremonies in Kashmir and the neighboring border area of Kargil, which featured religious gatherings, scholarly conferences and mourning processions to honor Hazrat Fatima.
Hazrat Fatima exemplifies the highest standards of behavior as a daughter, wife and mother. Her life stands as a timeless model of virtue for every generation. Although she lived only 18 years, her spiritual closeness to God earned her the title of Leader of the Women of Paradise.
Mourners emphasize that Hazrat Fatima's immense contribution to Islam is often overlooked, particularly in the West due to persistent misconceptions about women's rights and status in Islamic tradition.
Islam uniquely advocates gender equality and firmly protects women's rights. In an era where society increasingly commodifies women, the teachings and example of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, are more relevant than ever, offering a complete model of dignity and respect. Her moral integrity, humility and devotion make her unique among all women.
Speakers recalled Prophet Muhammad's profound love for his daughter, affection that directly challenged the norms of pre-Islamic Arabia, where daughters were frequently devalued.
Hazrat Fatima possessed qualities beyond description. She was a divine personality and a fountainhead of guidance and piety. Our holy prophet's love and respect for his daughter was so profound that it would stand up in her honor. Her unwavering defense of justice and rightful leadership reflects her commitment to truth, integrity, and the rights of the oppressed.
The speakers urged people to study Hazrat Fatima's life more deeply and draw inspiration from her patience, piety, and unwavering faith, saying her legacy remains a guiding light for Muslim women and a model of steadfastness and spiritual excellence.
As Kashmir joined the global Muslim community in remembering Hazrat Fatima Zahra, scholars and participants describe her as a timeless role model whose humility, strength and devotion continue to guide Muslims across generations. Sayyidri Safir, Indian Administered Kashmir.
Iran Supreme National Security Council Ali Larajani arrived in Pakistan on Monday. His visit marks a significant step in the ongoing efforts by both countries to consolidate cooperation amid heightened regional tensions. Shortly after his arrival, Larajani met Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, President Asif Ali Zardari, Deputy Prime Minister Ishaq Dar, and other high-ranking officials and think tank heads, engaging in wide-ranging discussions on bilateral ties and regional security. The discussions focused on expanding bilateral trade, with both sides reiterating their commitment to removing trade barriers, activating the barter trade mechanism, and expediting the Pakistan-Iran Free Trade Agreement. Larajani also praised Pakistan's support for Iran during the U.S.-Israeli aggression against the country earlier this year.
We discussed all key bilateral matters, especially how to expand our economic cooperation and strengthen trade.
Pakistan is a true brotherly nation, and together we explored practical ways to deepen our security ties, enhance people-to-people contact, and coordinate our positions on major international issues.
Pakistani leadership underscored Islamabad's commitment to deepening political, economic, and security cooperation with Tehran.
We discussed all the regional, bilateral, global issues. It was a wonderful meeting. I'm grateful to my brother Excellency for his visit and sparing time to meet with me. And we had very open discussion about all the issues which are currently being faced by the regional and the multilateral forums.
Observers say Lara Jani's visit signals a strategic recalibration in Iran's regional engagement after the June war with Israel. They say the visit also underscores Pakistan's rising relevance in Tehran's long-term vision, particularly in border security, regional trade, and balanced diplomacy in a volatile neighborhood.
We are proud of Iran's resistance. They have set a new example because they have shattered the myth of Israeli invincibility through the determination, through the will, and the fighting power of the Iranian nation. And we feel that Iran showed that imperialism, hegemony, Zionism. They say might is right, right is might. And they failed miserably in that.
Lara Jani is the second high-ranking Iranian official to visit Pakistan this month, after Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bakar Kalibaf.
The latest high-level meetings between the top officials of Iran and Pakistan show that the two neighbors are not only focused on boosting trade and economic partnerships, but also on developing coordinated mechanisms for regional peace and security. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Thanks to Trump, European Commission insiders say an atmosphere of fear and uncertainty continues to hang over EU-US trade relations. Meeting on Monday, EU trade ministers agreed the bloc must broaden its commercial horizons and seek additional stable partners.
What we are working on continuously, that we have to diversify our trade. The commissioner gave us a state on ongoing negotiations with India and a number of other countries and regions in Asia, Middle East and Africa.
It emerged at Monday's meeting, attended by senior White House officials, that the EU has already paid €173 billion for US energy imports this year, much of it for costly liquefied natural gas shipped across the Atlantic. Those charges filter through industry and ultimately onto consumers. It's a stark contrast to the much cheaper Russian gas that once powered the EU. The head of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, struck a deal with Trump at his golf course in Scotland last July. He had been threatening 50% US tariffs on all EU imports, but in the end they settled on a baseline 15% levy. Now Washington officials are annoyed at the EU over its slow implementation of that deal. Punishing 50% US tariffs on EU steel and aluminium remain firmly in place. The current trade arrangements have drawn sharp criticism from inside the European Parliament.
Trump is the worst bully in the schoolyard. He picks on everyone. You should never give in to blackmail. The more money we promise to pour into the US, the more they will demand from us.
EU citizens are equally scathing of the current US administration.
I think it's just right now a pause maybe before, I know, like maybe then Trump decides to impose tariffs again or to increase them on us. And plus right now with the Ukraine plan, again, like the recently disclosed Ukraine plan is going to be other tensions as well.
If Vance is taking the place of Trump because he's talking about that now, I think it's even more dangerous. And in a way, even if they go back and they will be less rude in a few years, I think the tune is set, if we can say this in English. I think it's very dangerous. Yeah, I think so.
Government leaders are being accused of surrendering far too much ground to Trump on trade, leaving millions of already struggling EU businesses and households to shoulder the cost. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Italian prosecutors will have to decide whether to put the suspects, who today are between 65 and 80 years old, on trial They are suspected of voluntary murder aggravated by cruelty and abject motives, a crime which has no statute of limitations and carries a maximum life sentence. Some political analysts believe that the whole Sarajevo sniper tourism affair can also be read through the lens of geopolitics. They suspect that there are governments who are trying to link Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić to the so-called sniper safaris that took place in Bosnia in the 1990s.
The risk that this affair is turned into a political tool clearly exists. Some may be eager to find political implications in these murders, but they would be wrong. Those were just criminal acts.
I think it could well be politicized because the information that we have at the moment is very murky indeed, and no concrete details are being given as to what is actually being investigated. Neither the numbers, nor the people involved, nor the countries involved.
During the Rome press conference, Gavazzeni also pointed out that Italy's military intelligence agency was aware of the abominable trips when they took place, but nothing was done to stop them. Max Civili, Rome.
Next to the conscientious objector's commemorative stone, a demonstration rooted in conscience. Demonstrators, some from other parts of Europe, defying the elements and threats of arrest, holding placards that have become symbols of nonviolent action.
What people here are doing and what the widespread wave of civil disobedience that we've started with Defend Our Juries is against the prescription of Palestine Action. And that prescription, which is now being challenged in the High Court next week, is basically what we're arguing, that it is unjust, it's immoral, and it should have never happened. And it is really a breach of everyone's civil liberties. It is really an attack on democracy.
Before long come the arrests. Since these protests first began in the summer, British police have arrested more than 2,000, charging hundreds under terror laws in a move the demonstrators say is to stifle dissent against the UK's complicity in Israel's genocidal war on Palestinians.
They've attempted to use terrorism legislation to remove from all public discourse the one body of people in this country who, as citizens, have stood up and put their bodies on the line to materially interrupt an economic, military, and diplomatic collaboration in genocide.
Palestine Action was prescribed by former Home Secretary Yvette Cooper in June this year. Membership of or support for the group is punishable by up to 14 years in prison.
The government is complicit in the genocide in Gaza, and they will do anything to criminalize any resistance against it, including old people sat with signs saying, "I oppose genocide."
In an unprecedented move in British history, Palestine Action is challenging its prescription in this court starting November 25th in the form of a judicial review.
If the High Court votes in favor of Palestine Action, the thousands of arrests and the hundreds of charges that were brought against demonstrators like these under the Terrorism Act of 2000 will also be quashed.
A victory for Palestine Action would also have repercussions for its jailed members, six of whom are now on an open-ended hunger strike in prisons across Britain. Cyprus, London.
Israel has struck a residential building in the heart of the Beirut suburbs. The third and fourth floors of a nine-story building were badly damaged, with debris filling the road, damaging cars and property. Deputy head of Hezbollah Political Bureau confirmed to Press TV that a senior commander was targeted in the strike.
This is an attempted assassination, targeting a key leader within the resistance. What matters now is that we document this as a clear act of aggression, an escalation we cannot and will not tolerate. It is our responsibility at the national level to establish a response that confronts Israel's attempt to undermine our sovereignty.
Although the Israeli statement said the target was a commander in the resistance, people near the scene say Israeli strikes are targeting everyone.
I am from this neighborhood.
every time they come up with this claim that they are targeting a member of the resistance, we are all members of the resistance. I want to tell our Prime Minister, who was a judge in the International Court, if your diplomacy can't protect us and solve our crisis, then leave us to be and don't speak in our name. And this mechanism is obviously biased towards Israel.
Alice believes the Israeli claims that Hezbollah has rehabilitated is merely preparing the ground for a larger escalation and a U.S. green light for this aggression.
This marks a new level of violation, and there are two potential outcomes. Either the resistance retaliates, which would escalate into a full-scale war, or they absorb this blow, which could embolden Israel to carry out further strikes. Both options are devastating. This is a turning point. With Israel seeking to normalize its escalation in Lebanon, backed by U.S. support, and with the Lebanese government failing to take action.
President Joseph Aoun called on the international community to intervene firmly to stop Israeli attacks on the country. Lebanon, he said, reiterates its call to the international community to assume its responsibility and intervene firmly and seriously to stop the attacks on Lebanon and its people. The Israeli strike on the southern suburbs of Beirut and the U.S. blessing are considered part of the growing pressure by both sides to enforce full surrender by Hezbollah and full compliance of the Lebanese government to disarm the resistance. However, many believe that this opens the way for different scenarios, especially if the resistance decides it is time to retaliate. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Glorify Allah.
mountains of Mecca bear witness that I, to the oneness of Allah do I testify. For all that he's given me, how can I deny? My purpose in life should be only to cry. La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. There is no God but Allah. Muhammad is his messenger. La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. There is no God but Allah. Muhammad is his messenger. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad Rasulillah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad Nabi Allah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad Rasulillah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad Rasul of Allah.
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, let there be light, and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting it. And my guest speakers, Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser, helping me criticize movies with religious and spiritual themes. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Yasser, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Always a pleasure being with you, Brother Muhammad Jawad.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure. And the pleasure is all mine. Sayyid Abdullah, how are you? And salamu alaykum, greetings to you.
Wa alaykum salam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. One of the movies that we decided actually to start criticizing is, a fairly old one, What Dreams May Come, produced in 1998, directed by Vincent Ward, featuring actors and actresses such as Robin Williams, Cuba Gooding Jr., and Jessica Brooks Grant, to just name a few. IMDb gave this movie 7 point out of 10, while Rotten Tomatoes gave this movie 52%, and Prime Video 7 out of 10. The film tells the story of Chris Nielsen, a man who dies in a car accident and enters a vibrant afterlife, only to discover his wife, Annie, has committed suicide out of grief. He embarks on a quest to find and reunite with her in the afterlife. That's about the plot of this movie. And before we get on with our program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, we'd like to have a little break by listening to a short part of this movie or trailer of the movie What Dreams May Come, produced in 1998, directed by Vincent Ward. Stay with us.
The moment that comes for everyone. Has come for Chris Nielsen.
You've died, Chris.
If heaven were a place of beauty...
Whoa!
Boy, I screwed up. I'm in dog heaven.
...and wonder...
Nice place you got here.
No. Nice place you got here.
We all paint our own surroundings. You're the first guy I know to use real paint.
Where you felt no fear.
I'm going to drown.
Can't. You're already dead.
Oh.
And knew only joy.
I can fly.
Yeah! It's your world! Oh.
Could you forget the past?
Welcome back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Mohammed Jawad, hosting this program. Brother Yasser and Syed Abdullah, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie What Dreams May Come, produced in 1998, directed by Winston Ward. As you know, we didn't finish the criticism of this movie in the last episode of Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, and we'd like to continue with our questions and the critique of this movie. Brother Yasser, I'm going to ask you a very difficult question.
Okay.
Do we have any tradition, any, let's say, account, historical, religious, spiritual, mystical account regarding the type of communication which is achieved in the afterlife? Is it in the form of language, or is telepathy or something else, or in the form of thought, so, as some people say?
So, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. That's one of the mysteries of death. First of all, we need to understand that this movie depicts of the afterlife.
Yes.
It's just being the function of the brain and so on and so forth. And thoughts, that is incorrect according to the Islamic tradition. The Islamic tradition is clear that the human being has two facets to their existence. One being the physical aspect of their existence, the other being the soul or the ruh, the nafs, whatever you want to call it in the kalami sense. Yes, these words have different meanings in the other sciences, but in the science of theology and in my kalam, they all mean the same thing. So when someone passes away, obviously that physical body is gone.
Yes.
It's gone. However, we do know from particular accounts, tradition from the Quran al-Majid, from traditions, that we believe in what is known as this bodily resurrection. And what does that actually mean? Doesn't mean that you'll have the same body that you will that you had or has the same qualities of the body that is here in the material world. But it's a type of form, a vehicle, a vessel by which the soul has to be carried in. Again, understanding the different realms of existence. So this, we're looking at the first realm of existence after the material realm, which is the alam al-misal. So in that alam al-misal, where most of the these philosophers and urafa will say that the hereafter will take place, and with some of the urafa said, like same concept as this movie, that you are creating your own heaven and hell,
right?
Same as the movie tries to depict anyway, that you are creating it. And we have many traditions like this in terms of the person with the actions in this world, right at this very moment, are creating their own heaven or hell, right in this moment now. But to answer your question, at that particular moment in time, we do have certain ahadith indicating conversations of people. For example, there's one tradition that says that the people will be able to see the imams, the prophets, people they've seen before. In the Quran al-Majid, there is actually a verse that says the people of heaven will be looking down at the people of hell and saying, you know,
right?
You know, what's up, basically.
Yes.
So there's a communication now. Exactly how that communication takes place is not known. Because there are certain hadiths that say, oh, the language of paradise is Arabic.
Yeah.
But does it necessarily have to be Arabic?
No.
Why Arabic? Is it necessary that communication takes place the same way as me and you are communicating right now? Understand, the way me and you are communicating right now, there is a process, i.e., I have to first imagine those words, understand the meaning of it. Goes very fast, obviously, and then transfer those meanings that I have from my soul to you. Then you have to always get the same process of understanding it. Is that the process that's going to happen in the hereafter, or no? It's not necessary to be that. Is that just by me and you being in the same room together? I already communicate, and you communicate. You understand what I want to say? You understanding what we, there's an understanding, there's a closeness. So it may not necessarily be language like this.
Yes.
But communication doesn't, and again, telepathy, and that, because there's no such thing as brain firing and stuff, whatever you want to call it. But it's a form of communication. Exactly how two souls communicate doesn't necessarily, even in this world, there are souls that communicate.
Yeah.
Without language.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. Without language. They communicate. Yeah. I know exactly what that person is feeling, you know what I'm feeling. So why is that something unimaginable in the hereafter?
With my educational background in language, you know, I asked this question, and I know there's a huge difference between language and communication. That's why I asked this question in the form of communication, not languages, because languages, in fact, take time and
this is a means of communication.
And it needs some conditions or preconditions that needs to be actually met. And we don't know whether there is time, place, or whatever. Are there other dimensions in the afterlife? That's another question. Sayyid Abdullah, let me ask you this question. What is the significance of the nature or visual beauty of heaven in the movie?
From their perspective, from our perspective?
Both. Do they correspond? Like?
Yeah, pretty much. Because, see, the idea is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for us, He promised, because human beings, we ourselves are visual.
Mm-hmm.
We see, we visualize. Now, obviously, this is another discussion. What is the eyes that see or the soul that see? And how does that manifest itself in the afterlife? Because obviously the body will change. We're going to have a different entity altogether. We're going to look different. So what sees? But obviously Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, He focuses on the visual aspect of heaven. How it's built and from what it's built and the diamond and emeralds and this and that and the beauties.
Mm.
So obviously there's something that we as human beings are attracted to, which is the imagery of things and beautiful things.
Mm.
And in that movie, they try their best. I mean, considering that the year it was released, 2000.